And hi, everybody, this is Armand DeMille, back with you with The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we have been talking... We've been talking about elders. Talking about elders for a couple of weeks now. Just one more fact about elders, because we're going to look at elders in the workforce eventually. But I ran across an interesting statistic. The ADEA, the Age Discrimination Employment Act, defines 40, age 40, as moving into the aged category. So when they talk about age discrimination, the cutoff point is 40 years old. So any of you who hit 40... you're now one of the aged ones. Did you know that? Jobs. A friend tells me about working at a PR firm which relegated most employees to cubicles. Cubicles from which everyone can hear your every word if you speak up. So how do you think employees are going to respond to cubicles? What do you think? What do you think happens? What do you think happens to a person when you say to them, you're now one of many, you know, e pluribus unum, you're now one separated just by a plastic piece of plexiglass? All right. Well, obviously they wouldn't have done it if it wouldn't work. Clearly it works in some way. Maybe they let you dress up your own space if you want to, but they found that if they give you a computer, give you a desk, give you a chair, give you another chair so somebody could sit in there with you if you want to, it works. So at first, people took to this and said, okay, this is what the new company's like, or they got hired this way in the first place. So what would they do in order to maintain their individuality? They'd talk on phones. And they'd whisper on the phone to their friends. They'd call their friends in the middle of the day. I'm here. Hey, how are you? Oh, good. Yeah, I had a great time last night. So you'd just get on the phone and you'd whisper. And because you wanted to have some sense of yourself. Because when you take away an individuality and identity, you make people want to avoid this invisibility. So phone usage escalated. And in many agencies, you could walk in, especially PR agencies, and you'd hear a murmur. See, and so at first you would hear something like this. As soon as you walk in, it's almost like a crowded bar, but it's there. It's really, really low. See, then they discovered that this murmur sound was a little disturbing, and they decided to play Muzak. So you'd have this music over the murmur. And it began it sounding like a bar scene, right? Just subliminally. You didn't know it. Not so bad. What do you think? So who's going to save the day? What are you going to do with a situation like this? What are you going to do? Here I come to save the day. Who's going to save? How is this? This isn't the way we meant to work. Work used to be related to a product. You know, first for some people, work was related to their families. It was like my father did it before me, now I do what my father did, and I did what my grandfather did, and I'm a carpenter, my father was a carpenter, you know, unless he's Jesus. And I'm a carpenter, and my father was a carpenter, and my grandfather was a carpenter, and that's what I do. I do what my family did. I represent my family. In fact, my name very often was chosen because that's what my family did. If your last name is Carpenter, you'd be guaranteed there's a carpenter in your family. Plumber? There are people with the name Plumber. You know, I've never met anybody with the name Electrician. You know, Joe Electrician. Maybe because the name started long before that. But that used to be what jobs used to be about. It used to be about carrying on family heritage, doing what your family did. Then there was product. Then there was the Industrial Revolution. And here we now have these products that you worked on, and you can be proud of your product. You could look and you could work on a train, and you could hear your train and see your train and really think, hey, that's, I'm helping produce this. I'm helping to get people from there to there. Even I know people who are aircraft mechanics, and as aircraft mechanics, they feel really proud of the airplanes that fly, and they are the mechanics. They're not flying the planes, but they love their work. They love keeping that plane in shape. Because you're related to your product. Now, what happened in this world, of course, in the microchip world, we started getting removed from our product. And we're further and further away from it. Then things got invented, like psychology. And now the only product is the person coming in the door. But when they leave, there is no product. What have you done? You don't really know for sure. Maybe they're a little happier. They report it to you, but you don't see anything. So the products disappear. You know, maybe there are some people out there who could look at every bottle of Coca-Cola and said, you know, I'm responsible for mixing the red that goes on the Coke bottle. But there are very few people who could point directly to the product of their work. So what happens? You're now in the cubicle and you're really working on something that you're really not going to be a part of. So at first, you got to find some way to individuate. Email, right? Email's a good idea. You get on email or you do online shopping. You use your computer for other than work stuff. Then the boss finds out. Because the boss starts tracking what happens with their computers. And he finds out that about more than 50% of the time spent by employees was spent on email, browsing, shopping, or playing solitaire. The most chosen game, solitaire, mind you. What an interesting thing. A person playing solitaire at work, what are they saying? I am alone. I am alone. I'm connected to nothing. You see, work is partially a community. It's a community, and if you don't have the community, like a receptionist job, very often, being a receptionist, you're removed from the community. You're not a part of it. You can't really be involved in the discussions because you're out front all the time. There used to be a thing called a coffee klatch, or there used to be a thing around the water cooler. They don't exist anymore. No more common water coolers. So community is kind of falling apart, and work becomes a different thing. Now the computer is there, and now we have, you're now getting tracked on what you do on your computer. The bosses are looking at your histories. So in walked Facebook, right? Facebook, right? An interesting way to do it. Now Facebook, but you can't do it on your computer, but you could do it on your cell phones. So now cell phone Facebook becomes an enormous thing. Add to that the solution of all solutions, text messaging. Now you have Facebook and you have text messaging, and this is all taking place on your phone. And my friend tells me that at her job, almost everybody in their cubicle is using one hand to do their work on the computer, and somehow they are ambidextrous. They're using your other hand to do the text messaging and the and Facebook. Nobody's going to kill the human spirit. There's a rebellion. Now Facebook goes public, and soon all texting will go public, and it'll all be public information, and anything you've ever said, anything that was ever written to you will now become part of the public eye, because it is, right, as we see in so many news. You know, there used to be telephones. I'm sitting in a studio with two people who are under 30 years old, and neither of them probably have ever had the richness, oh yes, I guess they did, the richness of a landline phone conversation. Now, I'm not saying good old times, because I love cell phones. I think cell phones are great. I think the idea that you could pick up a phone and walk around. Remember the first time I was in Europe and I saw cell phones in France. And when I asked about them, people, almost everybody was on the phone. They said because our underground phones are terrible, terrible. Our wired phones are terrible. The wire system was horrible. You get cut off all the time. You get people listening in. Cell phones were a dream. Disregarding the health hazard of cell phones, if it exists, cell phones have been amazing. But you don't talk on them anymore. A cell phone is not for conversation. Because if you're talking on it, if you realize someone picking up a cell phone, they're not talking into the cell phone. They're talking past the cell phone. They're talking past it. They're talking into the air. And the phone is hanging off somewhere on one side of their face. Now, in landline phones, you would talk into a mouthpiece. And there was this intimacy that many of you will remember. There was an intimacy about a phone conversation, let's say at midnight, that you have with somebody you love who you're not living with, and you have this conversation, and you're talking to each other. It's almost like you're in each other's head. It was so beautiful. It was so lovely. But now they came along with some ideas like the Optimum 3-Play or the 3-Way or the Fios, and what they've done is they've converted landlines into digitized lines. And the way you could tell the difference between a digitized line and a regular landline, which goes through wires, which are becoming extinct, is try to play music over it. Remember you used to hear a lovely piece of music and you'd say to somebody, here, listen to this. Don't try to do that with a cell phone. It breaks up, it cracks, it sounds miserable. So no one gives a good phone anymore. Not except they do it in text. They've converted it to text. So phones sound like junk, as great as they are. The cell phone's not an intimate. So when you get a... So let's get back to work, okay? So now you spend most of your time at work texting or emailing, and clearly you're not getting paid to do that. Clearly, if you make $10 an hour, but spend half of your time doing personal work, you're getting $15 an hour. See, time is money. Is that really the question? Well, to you, you can say to yourself, well, you know, I worked extra hard. I worked through my lunch hour, therefore I deserve this. And maybe you do. Is there an ethic to work? Well, I have a question about that. If you choose to work for somebody else, do you have a work ethic? Is there anything wrong with stealing from your boss? Well, you wouldn't call it stealing, right? If you're just working, if you're doing cell phone work, while you're doing your work, you say, well, I'm doing what I was told to do. But of course, you'd do it twice as fast if you weren't doing the other stuff too. But I'm getting my job done because all the boss expects is that your job is going to be get done at a slower pace because somehow everybody moves at this slow pace. It's like feather bedding. You know, it's like everybody moves at this slow pace on purpose. Because if anybody moves seats speedier than anyone else, then the people aren't going to, then there's going to be this, the boss will expect more of everybody. But since the products all cost more, because the employees are doing personal work instead of the work that they're, well, maybe they're supposed to be paid for, then the products cost more and then everybody else pays a little more. So it kind of goes down the pike. So here's my question to you. What's wrong with it? What's wrong with petty larceny? What's wrong with it at work? What if you take a pen home? So what? Interesting thing I was told about in Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, the basic Bible. What a strange oxymoron that is. He said in Mein Kampf, if you get somebody to steal from you, you own them. And he would recommend letting people steal. And I saw that picked up by a couple of agencies I knew who would make up pens. They'd make really fine pens and they'd put their name on it. And people would steal these pens. And they would steal them. They were told to leave the pens behind. But somehow they stayed connected. So is it part of a strategy to have you steal so it's my way of enslaving you? My, as an employer, do I enslave you further by having you steal? You know, is there anything wrong with it? What's wrong? And I want you to give me your calls and your ideas about this at 212-209-2900. We'll take your calls in just a few minutes. What's wrong with it? Either you feel bad about it, You feel guilty. You feel angry. You feel cheated. You feel something. But you wind up doing it. You steal time. You take time off. You work on their computers. You take things home with you. You know, the chef who takes home an extra piece of meat for his family. You know, what's wrong with all this? Either you feel bad about it, or you don't. Now, when you don't feel bad about it, then I start to get a little worried. Because I'm not saying you should feel bad about it. But if you do feel bad about it, at least you're putting in perspective, you know, I'm taking from something I shouldn't do, and I'm staying aware of it. But if you don't feel bad about it, that means in your mind, this is something you allow yourself. So I met a man the other day. He came in and he said to me, I'm having a relationship with one woman and I'm married. He said, and I'm in the middle of this thing. He said, I told my wife all about it. And she says, I have to stop seeing this other person. And I probably do for the sake of my family. He said, so I'll probably stay with my wife. He said, but I have no good feelings towards my wife. He says, and I've tried to work it out in therapy. So he says, I guess I'm going to do what's best for my wife. That's what he said. But what I heard him say is, I guess I want to do what's best for my life. It sounds very similar, right? But my ears kind of heard him in two different ways. One way, I guess I'll do what's best for my wife, but I want to do what's best for my life. So I took that dichotomy and I asked him about it. I said, you know, I heard both things there. Which one is best for your life? He said, my life. My life, what's best for my life is to be an honest man. I want to be somebody who is living at the highest level of personal integrity. I want to never look over my shoulder. I want to do what I feel like doing, but I want everything I do to have at least in its consciousness. That's my choice of how to live. And he said, can you help me get there? Can you help me get to that point? And I said, okay, that's my kind of guy. See, almost anybody else I know says, can you help me be disguised better? Can you help me lie better? Can you help me hide better? Very few people say, can you help me be myself better? So asking Lauren the question about stealing, she asked a very brilliant question, as she usually does. She said, is stealing a moral question? Is it a moral question? Is stealing a moral question? What is morality? What is this thing? The Protestant work ethic. Protestant work ethic is a belief that if you work hard and good, you get closer to God. Right? It's that hard work is good work. Hard work makes you busier and makes you more religious in some way or other. Hey, this is Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. In a couple of minutes, we're going to be taking your calls. Because it says about work and your work. Now, most of you, as we know, listening to this radio station during the day, have decided that you would have this hour for yourself somehow. Now, I know you're probably not doing it at work. You're probably working on your own at home. And why are you doing that? Most people who do not work for someone else have either successfully or unsuccessfully worked their careers. You know, if unsuccessfully, it means you don't have a job and you're out of a job and you're looking for work. And that means all you're looking for is a paid position that's higher than your unemployment check. Because it makes you feel good. It makes you feel community. It makes you feel like you're doing something in life. Retirement is brutal. Brutal. Unless you're surrounded by a community. Unless you have a real cush. You know, a really strong cushion. It's really, retirement is a difficult thing. So what you've got left is people with their jobs and trying to do jobs one way or another. Now, if you have a job and you're listening to this show, then you've cut a pretty comfortable niche for yourself. But most of you are going to say, I don't want to work for anybody else. I want to work for myself, and here's how I do it. And in comes the next savior. The next savior is called, and the biggest one, is work at home. And here it is. Everybody's allowed to do it now. Now people are finding ways to work at home. They're being given jobs to work at home. They're being given commissions to work at home. You could take your computer and go home. I know many people who work 2 or 3 days a week and go home the rest of the time and work at home from home, and they produce that way. They get paid by the job, not by the hour. Very, very interesting thing. 212-209-2900. I'm going to start taking your calls. Hi. In fact, let's talk to whoever's there now. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
How are you, my brother? This is Stefan Omar calling from
the Big Stefan Mango. Omar. How are you?
Okay. I'm listening to you, and you're like a breath of fresh air, as usual. But when we talk about stealing, I'm going to look at the broader perspective, and I hope that I'm in line with your train of thought. We live in a country that was stolen from our Inuit people, our native people. So the pilgrims who came over here were the biggest thieves of all. And you're down there in a den of thieves, you're down there on Wall Street. And I mean, who are bigger thieves than the people down at Wall Street? So when you talk about stealing, I think that if you take something and if you give back, like if you take from the rich and give back to the poor, a.k.a. Robin Hood, then I don't see anything wrong with that. And I think I was listening to your program, and I heard Bob Dylan. By the way, happy 70th birthday to Bob. He said in Positively 4th Street, I think, one of his tunes, he says, to live outside the law, you must be honest. And that line has always stuck in my head. I've told that because I've lived outside the law all my life, but I've always been honest. So I don't think sometimes stealing is wrong. As long as you don't hurt anyone, as long as you don't kill anybody, as long as you give back.
And Omar, let me just say, if there's a part of this, you know, let's say they don't do it in telephones anymore. Let's say you found money. Right? You found money in a taxi cab. If you were in a taxi cab and you found money, you found a wallet, what do you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
I would usually give it back.
You'd find the person, right?
Pardon me?
You'd find the person.
I would do my best to try and find that person and give it back. And on the bottom line, I wouldn't look for a reward either. I think that it's more blessed to give than receive.
You're not being opportunistic. You're not one of these people who are going to take any opportunity to get what you could get. Because what if you found $500 and you knew you could give that away to people who really need it?
I would do that. I would definitely do that. I have done that.
But would you return the wallet of the person with the $500?
Would I return the wallet? Well, I would look for the person. If I couldn't find the person, then I would probably donate it to a charity.
So how about the following? How about looking for the person and saying, I found your wallet with $500. I decided to give the money to a charity, but I want to return your wallet to you.
Well, you know what? Sometimes we just have to deal with it, brother.
I hear you.
Sometimes we just have to deal with it. I mean, everything isn't fair. It all depends. If that person had all their ID and all of their family photos and things in it, because I remember something like that happened to me once before, and I gave the lady a tip, and she says, you know why I returned it to you? I returned your briefcase, and I had money in it. She says, because of your family photos. I saw pictures of your children, your grandchildren. See, and I felt guilty. So, and I'll always remember that. So I always try and look at the glass as being half full instead of half empty.
Omar, thanks so much for calling in.
Remember,
thank you. Once
I love
again.
You, and there's nothing you can do about it, Armand.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls. We're talking about work and work ethic. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Yes, I hear you. Hello? I can barely. Hello there, you're on the air.
Hello, how you doing? Armand DeMille, how you doing?
Good. I think you're gone.
All right, we'll have to take another call.
Take another call. There's too much noise on that one. Hi there. Hello there, you're on the air.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. Go ahead, you're on the air. Talk.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I did want to speak on this topic that you are discussing, because from what I can see in this country right now, the work ethics as it regards employment is one that's based on culture. You have a nation of various cultures in this country, and each culture has a different perspective of America. And, you know, America at one time used to be a country back when it was called the United States. But once it became incorporated and became the United States of America, it's no longer a country, it's a business. And the problem with the business is this: the people that are on the bottom level, on the workforce level, they look up at the owners of the businesses, at the people who govern the nation, at Wall Street, and this is where they see the most thievery taking place.
Yeah, I know.
From the very people that are supposed to be examples to them in terms of how they're supposed to govern their lives. So when you look at the leaders, when you look at the businessmen, when you look at the stewards of society, and they are moving on a level, okay, of thievery, of dishonesty, of disloyalty and everything, it becomes very difficult for a company, a workforce, or even the leaders to try to incorporate ethics and morality into people, okay, that they're looking to get this from when they don't have it themselves.
Well, that's kind of, it's a really fascinating point of view. But of course, you know, we've always known that the higher-ups tend to be self-serving and will be exploitive. But I think you're right. There's something about the ethics.
It's become
transparent now in the government, everywhere you are, that you're just seeing. It's all about what everybody is being. They're just taking advantage as they can. And that it really is hard for you to teach your children, no, listen, give that back. The other day I went to a store, and I saw on the counter, they had one of these little hanging things. I picked it up. It was a solar-generated flashlight. It was like plastic. It was tiny. So I looked at it, and I saw how it worked, and I meant to put it back, but something happened. I reached in my pocket, and I put it in my pocket. I went away, and I was an hour away from there, and I realized I had it. I had to drive back to bring it back. The thing was $3. I probably spent more money in gas. I probably killed more dinosaurs. I probably polluted the planet more by doing that trip. But in my own heart of hearts, I just couldn't take something that wasn't mine. I at least want to hold on to that.
You know, the problem is that the majority of people, when they look at the system as it's presently structured, okay, and when you start thinking about things like thievery, you know, petty larceny, like you said, taking pens or whatever it may be, the majority of people, look, honestly, they really don't look at that as stealing. It's almost, to a degree, subconsciously.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, they owe me this. They overworking me. They underpaying me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
sure.
And then, if your consciousness is really expanded and you understand what's going on, you know, actually what's going on in terms of the business, then no, people don't have a consciousness about it. Like, I don't have a consciousness about certain things because let me give you a good example. I have a computer right now in front of me. I have a cell phone. And at the same time that I'm using these, you know, it hurts me to use a computer. It hurts me to use a cell phone because I already know that a lot of people are being killed every day over the minerals that are responsible for making this computer and the cell phone. Mm-hmm. People are dying in Africa and other countries just so that we can have the comfort. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
and
I
that's one of the major things. We're not going to speak out about the technology. We're not going to speak out about
it. But what can you do? What can you do since you are using your computer and your cell phone? It seems clear to me that you minimize all the damage of your footprint. It seems that you're a conscious human. It seems that every person you're with, if you see a piece of trash on the floor, you're the kind of person who's going to pick it up and throw it in the garbage.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that's a place you do play. So even though you may not be somebody who's not using your computer because it's got minerals that come from another place, you are somebody who's conscious. And that's part of this gang. That's part of this listening audience that I'm hoping to shake.
Right. Because what I'm looking for right now, honestly, with the computer, you know, I really personally think the computer is going to be the undoing of the present structure as it exists.
Sure, which may be the best thing.
Because it was only existing because they were able to monopolize and control communication, control information, and the computer has broken that world down.
We have to take a break. I want to thank you very much for calling in. Thank you for your opinion. When we come back, a little music, and then we'll be taking more calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back. Elvin Jones, Thad Jones, what a family. And if you didn't recognize that tenor saxophone, it was James Moody, and I selected it because it was called Burke's Works. Yes, Burke's Works, a very popular jazz tune. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, if you just tuned in. We're here to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. But what's it about? What it's about is not judging anyone, not being critical of people, trying to hear them in some way, taking a stand when you have to, that's for sure. We're talking about work. Now, in theory, workers exhibiting a good work ethic should be selected for better positions, more responsibility, and ultimately promotion. And that's the way it kind of happens. Now, this is not just about, you know, being kind to your bosses and being flirtatious. This is in some way or other, or is smoothing them. It's really about doing a good job. And ideally, as you do better work, you get promoted and you get more responsibility. But some people don't want more responsibility. They want to work and not be responsible. I've got one friend who was a manager and resigned her managerial position to be a worker position because she did not want to be in charge of people. And she does a terrific job, and her company recognizes her and gives her enormous bonuses because of her choice, because she did a fine choice. Now, is it, if you don't want to take more responsibility and you don't want to work harder, does that make you lazy? Does that say laziness? See, conservatives, many conservatives believe that laziness is morally wrong, even reprehensible, because one is not doing their ultimate share of work. Is it wrong to be lazy? Is it wrong to live off the welfare of others? All of these questions of right or wrong are what people jump onto, and this is what they use to kill each other, trying to say to each other over and over again, you're wrong. The hippie cultures, the slacker cultures, challenge the values in recent times, characterizing the desire not to be lazy as being submissive to authority and convention, and not valuable in and of themselves, only if it brings a positive result. Others have said that it's more important to work smart than to work hard. What about you? How do you work? What's your feeling about your work? What's your feeling about the work you do? And how about your work life in your life? How are you doing? 212-209-2900. Let me take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
All right, not there. We'll take the next one.
Take the next caller. Hi there. You're on the air.
Armand, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, okay. Is my radio low enough?
It's perfect.
All right. Now, you said when someone steals from you, you own them. There are these coach brothers that are stealing from my brothers and sisters in trade unions. Can you explain to me how I can own them?
Well, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to be able to comment on it, but since your government steals from you, and you choose to be a part of this government, you're owned by it. You know what I mean? But in a way, you also own them. They're afraid of you. The politicians are afraid of your vote. They're afraid of your power.
Go on.
So that's what I'm saying. That's it. That's the end of it. So on both sides of it, you know, if on both sides of it, there's always a power that you have. The power of the electorate, the power of the members, the power to unionize, the power to organize.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's just I hate how, like, the Republican plutocrats can't just let us be poor. They have to impoverish us. I mean, they have to steal so much from hardworking people like cops and teachers. And, you know, pretty soon they'll be coming after me.
Sure. As they will look down and say, all welfare, you know, all Medicare, all job unemployment, all of that looks like, to that mind, it looks like slackers. They're saying, no, get to work and produce. So what you have to do is understand that mind. Now, here's a question I want you to ask of yourself. What's your name?
My name's Manny Manhattan.
Manny Manhattan. Here's Manny. Manny, a question for you. How would you like to be one of them? How would you like to be on the other side if the law was that you have to do just what they do? How would you like to live that life?
Okay. Not that I would like to live like the Koch brothers, but can I live like Jay Rockefeller?
Yeah,
a wealthy person I admire who works very hard for the wealthy, for the elderly?
No. Am I giving it out?
He's cool.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the exploiters. How would you like to live by the exploiters? What does it do for you, you know, on the inside? I watch it all day long. I watch people talking about stealing from other people. I heard a story about a man who got his wife, he was about to get married, and he was a lawyer, and he had his, he told his prospective wife, I want you to sign this document because it means that you'll have possession of the house. He was giving her a house, and he just told her to sign it. And she signed it, and then he came in and told me how proud he was that he got her to sign a prenuptial agreement that she would never be allowed to take his money. And he was so proud of himself for having done this. And okay. It just, I said, what is that like to live that way? Imagine you're about to get married, and you got to steal from the person you're about to marry.
Is that really stealing?
Yeah, whatever that is. It's certainly exploitive. It certainly is.
Well, it's protecting what you own, which I can't.
Oh, no, he was protecting beyond that. He was protecting beyond that. He said, including whatever we make in our marriage. See, according to the government law, you whatever you earn during your marriage becomes part of what's called marital property. But his agreement said, no, including that, you don't get any of that either. So it was kind of, it was the work of the devil.
So he's saying about you walk out on me, you get nothing.
And I walk out on you, you get nothing.
Oh, well.
It's all, if the kids get nothing. And nobody gets
children
nothing.
Children get,
and nobody gets
I
nothing.
That.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy. So, Manny, thank you very much for calling in.
All right, thank you for your time, Armand.
Sure.
I love your show. Bye-bye
now. 212-209-2900. You know, the present crisis has stimulated technological change at an unprecedented scale and speed. The microchip revolution, that whole idea of things speeding up so quick, moving so fast. It's almost like work is no longer work. It's a different thing. What's the difference between work and spare time? We're losing these definitions. It's very interesting. It used to be, you know, you work a third of your life, you sleep a third of your life, and you play a third of your life. I don't think you could put those percentages up there anymore. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
Listen, with respect to your question where you're speaking about honesty and integrity before.
Sure.
I went into the bank one day. I just had my car repaired, and I went in to withdraw some money to pay for my car, which was roughly $300 for the transmission. And a gentleman, obviously before me, he picked up some coffee at the table there that they have in the bank sometime.
Yeah.
And he left an envelope there with $6,000 in it.
Oh, my gosh almighty.
So I immediately picked the envelope up, and I looked inside, and I saw all these $100 bills and so forth, and I just took it to the courtesy counter, and I gave it to the lady. And the guy comes back in 10 minutes later, and he's looking at the table. I said, did you leave your envelope here with some money? And he says, yeah. I said, well, I gave it to the counter. But you see, I was always taught, if it doesn't belong to you, you don't take it. And that's what I did. I simply returned the money to the bank, and this guy came in and got his money. And that was it.
Yeah. And that feeling is right.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said before, I would expect that if I had lost my money or left it behind, that somebody would return it to me. It doesn't often happen, you know, but the point is, it was my responsibility to be responsible, and that's what I did.
See, now it's a beautiful thing, because by doing that, you encourage that once more.
Right.
If that man ever found any money,
mm-hmm.
right, he probably would do the same thing after what you did.
I would hope so.
You know, just you're passing it on.
Great.
Thanks very much. What's your name, by the
Thank
way?
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yes, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take some more calls. Interesting, all men today, you know? Hi there, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand. I was interested in commenting on your topic.
Yeah, but you have your radio on in the background. You have to turn your radio down.
Oh, it's off.
It's off. I'm hearing a very bad connection.
Oh, maybe it's the connection with my cell phone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, try your best, okay?
Okay. I'm kind of piggybacking on.
I can't hear. I can't hear what's happening. Michael, okay. We're going to have to go to another call. I'm sorry.
Bye-bye.
I'm sorry. 212-209-2900. There's the proof of what I was talking about with cell phones. You know, cell phones, remote phones, landline phones, they work real well for calling into radio stations. But cell phones work also. Car phones work. Everything works. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Armand. It's Teresa. How are you?
Teresa.
Yes, how are you?
I'm great.
It's good to hear you. I'm catching your show as I'm on my way to play tennis because I'm not working today.
Is this the Teresa I know personally?
Yes, it is.
The Teresa from the office, Teresa Palmer?
Yes, it is.
The wonderful Teresa Palmer?
Yes, it is.
The certified nurse practitioner, yoga instructor, teacher of meditation, Teresa Palmer?
That's the Teresa Palmer.
And you're going to go play tennis?
I'm going to go play tennis. I am not working today, so I'm enjoying myself.
Nice to hear you today.
As I often do. And I love your topic on work.
Yes, yeah, so Teresa, tell me about your work as a nurse. Tell me about how that was for you.
How it was and how it is. My work as a nurse, I enjoy it. But I found that over the years of working very hard and working very long hours, that I really did get burnt out for a while. And I really had to take a step back and look at what did I really enjoy about my profession as a nurse and what was really frustrating me.
You know, what I know about you is you put 100% into everything.
I do.
You know, so like if you only put in 30% like a lot of people, you probably wouldn't get burned out. But at 100%, you are bound to get burned out, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. Maybe that's the way it should be. What aspect of it do you think was the most trying for you?
I think the most trying was when I wanted to do what was right, what I felt was right for people, and sometimes because of bureaucracy or because of the way that the society was educated, that a lot of times I felt that some of the things I were doing for people was simply doing it because this is what they expected me to do. And if you're in a business, if you're working for someone else, you don't want to have complaints about you. So sometimes,
especially as a nurse, yes.
Yes.
That community is so tight that if you start getting complaints about you, if you start stepping outside the box, they sure have a way of corralling you right away.
But they definitely do, because things in a lot of situations and institutions are done a particular way. And if you, as a nurse, feel that maybe you would like to do something a little different, or if you're working in a situation where, say, people are taking a lot of medications, and this is the practice of where you're working, a specialty or whatever it is, that if you kind of, you can't really go in there and say to people, you may not really need all these things, or could I work with you to try to eliminate some of these things? It's just not the right situation to do it. So sometimes you have to hold back on what you really believe in your heart.
Well, Teresa, you were a nurse during the time of a growing, the evolution of these medications. You know, they didn't exist before. So over the last 20 years, we have a drug for everything.
Definitely.
There's a chemical for everything now. And I'm sure some of it is great. It's keeping people alive. But a lot of it is we've got people tanked up to the hilt, and you had to watch it. You'd watch another drug come in, another drug come in, another protocol come in. You'd be working in hospitals who had a protocol assigned to them where they had to give out certain prescriptions as opposed to other prescriptions because there's a deal with the drug company.
Yeah, I wouldn't say exactly a deal, but what would happen is pharmaceutical companies would come in and they would promote certain things, and you kind of felt at that point that, okay, maybe this was the best thing to give at the time, or you were educated about it and the medication sounded good, so you gave it.
Yeah, yeah. But if you had it your way, you'd probably have a lot of people off almost all medications, knowing you.
I would definitely try. I mean, they do have their place. There's a time and there's a place for everything, but sometimes you see people that are so bogged down with medication that I think it really interferes totally with the quality of their life. And I think there's not enough education in our society. We're kind of a medication society.
So what did you learn is the effect of, I'm just going to ask you quickly, of yoga, which is what you teach, on people's health related to specifically medication and medication taking and stuff like that.
Well, I definitely found that there was decrease in pain, that once people moved and once they really got in touch with their feelings, because yoga is a practice, it's a moving meditation, it gets people in touch with the here and now, that there was less worry about some of the pain that they may be feeling, or more of an acceptance that this may be a part of the condition or a part of life or just a part of as we get older. The second thing is, because yoga does work every organ, every muscle, and every bone in the body, it has a lot of positive effects on the hormones. So a lot of times we need medication because of anxiety, because of depression, because of stress-related things, even thyroid. And through yoga, a lot of times you could balance the body, where people either need less of medication or oftentimes can go off of it. And I think with yoga, it's also the education that people are more in tune with themselves and they're more willing to even try to do other things besides medication.
Well, those are wonderful principles. Even if they're not achieved through yoga, you kind of said exactly what you would hope for with people. And one thing,
yes,
I love about you, Teresa, you're an honest person.
You've
always been, and it's part of why I love to be associated with you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Did
you speak to Marty yet?
No.
I'm going to give her a call.
Yes, I'm going to give her a call.
Okay, Marty.
I spoke to her the other day. I spoke to her on Tuesday. So
this is just
call.
A mention, a call out to Marty Resnick, wherever she is. She's gone through some surgery, and she's been a major volunteer at WBAI, helped a great deal with the fundraising, and an important part of the station. So good luck to you, Marty, wherever you are. I hope you're listening to our program.
Is, and I will definitely call her later on today.
Great. 212-209-2900. Time for one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there.
Armand.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Good. Can I give you a little imagery first?
Sure.
So this phone call is about maybe something you can help. I'm going to hang up and listen after I say it. Something in my own personal guilt about things. I'm sitting in my yard. I just did some yard work. I'm a teacher. I have off for the summer, obviously. I'm sitting here with my dog. I'm sipping some lemonade. And I have a very, 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 very good life. And I can't help but feel like I didn't do all the right things to deserve such a wonderful life. And so what I wonder is how I feel like I live my life with the right effort. I mean, I feel like I put the right effort in, raising money for charity with my students.
I'm losing your call.
When I can, I do work, and I do my...
Well, I've got to interrupt you for a moment.
Sure.
Your call's interrupting. Would you send me an email with the question? Because I would love to get the question, because we're just going to have to go off air right now. I noticed that we're 1 minute away.
All right, well, thanks anyway.
And your call's breaking up. But no, I don't mean to diss you. I mean, somehow, if things work out for us, we sometimes feel, how did I get here? How was I so lucky? How did I make it work when so many people couldn't? And it's important. It's important because, sometimes it's just we have to find our own way through the world. And some of us are lucky and make it, and some of our brothers and sisters don't. It's the design. Hey, I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille. Special thanks to all of you for being with me. Be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Go to thepositivemind.com to hear a rebroadcast of this program or any of the archives, or you can send me an email, Armand, ARMAND, @thepositivemind.com.